Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 15, Instructions for Civilized Human Beings, Text 25. Rajas Tamas Chasatvena Satvam Chopashamena Cha Etat Sarvam Guru Bhaktya Purusho Yanjasa Jayet Rajas Tamas Chasatvena Satvam Chopashamena Cha Etat Sarvam Guru Bhaktya Purusho Yanjasa Jayet. Ladies, Rajas Tamas Chasatvena Satvam Chosam Jmenata Etat Sarvam Guru Bhaktya Purusha Yanjasa Jayat Rajas Tamas Chasatvena Advam Chosam Jmenata Etat Sarvam Guru Bhaktya Purusha Yanjasa Jayat Rajas Tamas Chasatvena Satvam Chopashamena Cha Etat Sarvam Guru Bhaktya Purusha Yanjasa Jayat Raja Tama. The modes of passion and ignorance, cha and satvena, by developing the mode of goodness, satvam, the mode of goodness, cha also, upashamena, by giving up attachment, cha. And etat, these, sarvam, all, guru, unto the spiritual master, bhaktya, by rendering service and devotion, purusha, a person, he, indeed, anjasa, easily, Jayat can conquer. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. One must conquer the modes of passion and ignorance by developing the mode of goodness. And then one must become detached from the mode of goodness by promoting oneself to the platform of Shuddha Sattva. All this can be automatically done if one engages in the service of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. In this way, one can conquer the influence of the modes of nature. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Well, let's repeat this. One must conquer the modes of passion and ignorance by developing the mode of goodness. And then one must become detached from the mode of goodness by promoting oneself to the platform of Shuddha Sattva. All this can be automatically done if one engages in the service of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. In this way, one can conquer the influence of the modes of nature. Just by treating the root cause of an ailment, one can conquer all bodily pains and sufferings. Similarly, if one is devoted and faithful to the spiritual master, he can conquer the influence of sattva guna, raja guna, and tamo guna very easily. Yogis and jnanis practice in many ways to conquer the senses, but the bhakta immediately attains the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the mercy of the spiritual master. Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasado. The spiritual master is favorably inclined. One naturally receives the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, one can immediately become transcendental, conquering all the influences of sattva-gun, raja-gun, and tamo-gun within the material world. This confirmed the Bhagavad Gita, sagunan samatityayatan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One is a pure devotee acting in the directions of the Guru, one can easily get the mercy of the Supreme Lord and thus become immediately situated on the transcendental platform. This is explained in the next verse. Mam Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Bhacharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatyade Sitarne. There's a series of verses where it says this will be explained in the next verse, this will be explained in the next verse. So many things will be explained in the next verse. But in this particular verse, it mentions some things of interest here, like, for instance, if the spiritual master is favorably inclined, one naturally receives the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, one immediately becomes transcendental, conquering all the influences of sattva-guna, raja-guna, and tamaguna within this material world. So can anyone give us an example? If the spiritual master, like Srila Prabhupada, is situated on the transcendental platform and he sees everyone equally, why would he be unfavorably inclined towards those who are trying to serve him? Just like, for instance, it says, one will, if the spiritual master is favorably inclined, so does that mean that our spiritual master is not favorably inclined towards us? Is that our problem? Because after all, the spiritual master, he loves everyone, supposedly. The most elevated devotee, the Uttama Adhikari, he loves everyone. So why is it that we're not all pure devotees situated on the transcendental platform? Does that mean our spiritual master is not favorably inclined towards us? He doesn't like the way we look? We don't have the right face? Can anyone say? Yes. So it has to be some, in order to make spiritual advancement, we have to have some special reciprocation.
Well, just if you're following instructions of the spiritual master, you're going to make advancement, more sincerely,
doing that. Yeah. Yeah, as Prabhupada says, if one is a pure devotee acting under the directions of the Guru. So it's not just the Guru becomes favorably inclined as we render unalloyed, uninterrupted service. So what is the Guru teaching us? In other words, If it was so easy, the guru simply sits up there like Prabhupada and just waves his hand a few times and gives blessings, Ashabad. Then everyone goes, wow, that was far out. Can you do that again? If it was like that, then we'd all be pure devotees if we just get the right spiritual master. Sometimes we hear the spiritual master, we ask for his mercy. Can you wave your hand a few times and say, mercy? Ah, thank you very much. You're too kind. So here is actually where the mercy is coming from. The mercy of the spiritual master is he's able to explain to his disciple the philosophy in Krishna consciousness in such a way is that the disciple is, first of all, going to be receptive to listen to it, going to be able to understand it, be able to apply it, and that way he gets the mercy. Without the instructions, then one is not going to go anywhere. It's not that the spiritual master simply gives benedictions and the disciple receives the benedictions like an electric shock, and that way he makes advancement. The Prabhupada says, satisfaction of the self-realized soul, a spiritual master, is the secret of advancement in Krishna consciousness. Then he also says, blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. One should not only hear submissively, but one should get a clear understanding through submission, service, and inquiry. So it's a combination of activities that help one advance in spiritual life. And it's not different philosophies, it's different for different people. It's not I have the most merciful spiritual master, he gives his benedictions, and therefore everyone becomes blissful, and I don't have to do anything. He's taken my karma at the time of initiation, and now I'm free from sin, and everything's fine. I can just go along with, I do a little service just, you know, because I like it. And I'm going back to Godhead by the mercy of my spiritual master. No, that's not according to our philosophy in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Machita, Machkata, Prana, Bodhiantash, Parashparam, Katayantasram, Nityam, Tu Shanti Cha, Ramanti Cha. The thoughts of my pure devotees, they dwell in me, their lives are surrendered to me, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss by enlightening one another and conversing about me. In other words, Krishna consciousness is a science, and the most expert scientists can explain to us what that science is. And by hearing that science, and by seeing the examples of previous persons who actually have understood the science and applied them in their lives, if we follow in their footsteps, then proportionally we make spiritual advancement. Tesham satatam yuktanam. Bhajantam pritipurvakam. How consistently, 24 hours a day, we're engaged in devotional service, and how enthusiastically we're doing it just to please Krishna. So the spiritual master gives us sambandha. That is, everything here belongs to Krishna. It's very simple. Very simple, but very difficult to accept, that everyone and everything is actually Krishna's property. And as soon as we forget that, we get burnt by the illusory energy and covered by the illusory energy. That's the way it works. I may think, well, Krishna has everything. He should be able to give me a little something to enjoy in this world. He shouldn't be so greedy. I mean, he has enough. Why not give me something? So as soon as we think like that, let me look around what's in it for me, what Krishna is going to give me for my happiness and enjoyment, then Maya slaps us down. Whack, you rascal. But I'm enjoying it for Krishna. Whack, double whack. So-called doing it for Krishna, right? So Maya, Krishna, they're not fooled. They understand exactly what our motivations are. So the background information is everything belongs to Krishna without, and everyone belongs to Krishna without exception. I may claim this is my husband, this is my wife, this is my children, but this is my illusion. Well, we say, well, I'm a devotee. This is my devotee wife, this is my devotee children. That's also an illusion. Nothing is mine. Nirmana, moha, ditta, sangha, dosha. It's not I become a devotee, and now the laws of nature don't apply to me anymore because I'm a devotee. I'm transcendental to the whole thing. So I can think this is mine, and I am this body, and these things belong to me. No, it is all illusion. To think it belongs, this is Krishna's, my wife belongs to Krishna, my children belong to Krishna, my husband belongs to Krishna, that's reality. But Krishna has given me a situation where I'm supposed to act as his representative instrument, representative equals instrument, in order to help my wife, my husband, my children, my friends, my society make spiritual advancement. So that's called spiritual master. And what is the spiritual master thinking? Prabhupada revealed that. He's thinking that actually, who am I? I'm 1/10,000th the size of Tipperary's size. And I'm in a body which is supposed to be utilized as Krishna's instrument. And in order to find out what Krishna wants me to do with this body, I have accepted a spiritual master who's given me so many instructions, and by the mercy of the Super Soul, I'm being reminded what those instructions are, according to how sincere I am, according to my inquisitiveness about what my spiritual master wants me to do, then Krishna is supplying me intelligence. And when I give instructions to others, then I know that actually they're not my instructions, they're the instructions coming from my spiritual master by the mercy of the Super Soul. And therefore, when I see my followers, anyone who follows the instructions that I'm repeating, not my followers, anyone who's following the instructions that I'm repeating, they're not my instructions. They're my spiritual master's and Krishna's instructions. And therefore, when they apply it within their lives, when they become receptive to it, then I learn from them how to become a better servant to my spiritual master. Therefore, the spiritual master doesn't consider himself a spiritual master. He considers himself a servant of Krishna and all of Krishna's followers. And he learns from them how to become a better servant of Krishna. Prabhupada one time he wrote that even Srimati Radharani, sometimes she considers some of her subordinates to be her instructors, teaching her how to actually develop love for Krishna. So that's the nature of devotion. That's the nature of pure devotion. And the spiritual master may come in different varieties. Although in one sense the spiritual master is one, because the spiritual master is a representative of Krishna. But then, if one thinks my spiritual master is a representative of Krishna, and no one else, he's the only representative of Krishna, then my spiritual master or hasn't taught me properly, or I haven't heard from my spiritual master properly. Actually, the spiritual master is a representative of Krishna in as much as he follows the instructions of his spiritual master with devotion. How consistently and how enthusiastically he's executing the instructions of his spiritual master, to that extent he becomes the representative of Krishna. But then again, there are so many devotees who are executing the orders of Krishna coming in disciplic succession to different degrees of consistency and enthusiasm, to different degrees of understanding. So they're also, to some degree, representatives of Krishna. But the most expert spiritual master, he teaches us how to discriminate between the different representatives of Krishna, different persons who are engaged in devotional service. So this is a very essential point in the nectar of instruction out of many important verses. Many of those verses deal specifically with this. Krishna, such as Dadati Pratigrinati Gunyamakiti Pritsati Punte Bojayate Chaiva Shadvidam Priti Lakshana. Our spiritual advancement depends upon priti, loving exchanges amongst the devotees. If the devotees are actually Krishna's representatives, and in one sense, they're very dear to Krishna, and sometimes it says they're even more dear than Krishna to Krishna than Krishna is dear to himself. Therefore, in these society devotees, we have a great opportunity to make spiritual advancement. And we have a great opportunity to remain in our present condition life if we don't understand things properly and act properly. Unless we can actually engage properly in the loving exchanges of offering gifts and charity and accepting charitable gifts, revealing one's mind and confidence and inquiring confidentially, offering prasad and accepting prasad. Unless we learn how to properly engage in those loving exchanges with the devotees, either our advancement will be slow or quick or in between or something like that. Therefore, Krishneti yasi giritam manasedriyeta, that there's no room for enviousness in devotional service. At least if someone's chanting Hare Krishna, we learn how to respect them within our mind. We know that there are different degrees of advancement. We don't accept everyone on the same level because we're suddenly jumped to the platform of Mahabhagavats, because we have a Mahabhagavat spiritual master. Therefore, we've automatically gotten a free ride to become a free ticket to be a Mahabhagavat. No, we learn discrimination. And that discrimination is everyone is actually Krishna's servants. And if one is even a little engaged in Krishna's service, then we appreciate that. That now this soul is doing something for Krishna. So I must appreciate it. I appreciate everyone as Krishna's servant and that they have a potential to render service to Krishna. And I'm trying to help them become Krishna, render some service to Krishna, act as Krishna's instrument. So to inspire others and direct others how they can engage in Krishna's service. So when I see someone is doing that, then I respect that. I also am aware of the fact the person may be a sahajya or a neophyte devotee. It's not that he chanted Hare Krishna and I fall over in ecstasy. I say, oh, I'm your servant. Tell me what to do. Buy me, you know, go out and buy me some liquor. Oh, yes, whatever you do. You chanted Hare Krishna, so you're my guru. No, one has to learn discrimination also. Otherwise, one may get oneself into difficulty. Who to follow, who to respect is one thing. Who to cooperate with, who to serve together with, and who to follow instructions, that's a different thing. There are different ways of service. Respect within the mind, cooperation with the by activities, and then finally, who to actually faithfully hear from and follow. So one has to learn that with proper discrimination. That the Uttama Adhikari, one who's actually advanced in undeviated devotional service, which means he's strictly following the orders of his spiritual master 24 hours a day. And he's enthusiastic to help everyone become Krishna conscious. He sometimes, like Prabhupada, would criticize people, but it was part of his mission to help people become Krishna conscious. He was expert who to praise, who to criticize, how to inspire people to come to the platform of unalloyed, uninterrupted service to Krishna. Then we can actually, if we learn proper discrimination, how to associate with the devotees, how to respect persons who are possibly on the threshold of devotion, how to surrender to those who are actually more advanced than we are and enthusiastically follow their instructions with knowledge, then we can make tangible spiritual advancement. Now, of course, when we talk about spiritual master, we talk about there are different types of spiritual masters, Shiksha Guru, Diksha Guru, Vartma Pradaksha Guru. And we hear that in our society, sometimes there's too much emphasis upon one kind of guru and not enough emphasis on another type of guru. But actually, everything depends upon Shiksha. And Diksha simply helps us for our hearing or acquiring Shiksha. So we have to have the right Shiksha, the right instruction. And in order to do that, there has to be some etiquette, because the tendency of the conditioned soul, he accepts what he likes and he rejects what he doesn't like. And therefore he takes so many Shiksha Gurus according to what he wants to, what he wants. Because in a society of devotees, there will be so many different perspectives and opinions on things. And therefore, one freely takes Shiksha Gurus according to his present mood. Oh, he has the same opinion I have today, so I'll accept him as my Shiksha Guru. Oh, he changes his mind about something, I reject him. Or I change my mind about something. Now I take another Shiksha Guru to fit my mind today. So that's called whimsical. So therefore one has to have an ashraya steady. Now how steady the Diksha Guru will be, that may be one thing, but the Diksha Guru, he's telling us basically the same thing. How to engage in unalloyed, uninterrupted service to Krishna. How to engage in the loving reciprocations with the devotees according to their different positions. Now according to the advancement of the guru, how much he's engaged in loving reciprocation of the devotees, how much he's engaged in unalloyed, uninterrupted service, then he'll be able to instruct me and guide me. Therefore, the most important, my opinion, the most, what I've understood, the most important qualification of a spiritual master in ISKCON is he works as part of a team, a cooperation, knowing well that if he was the topmost devotee, then he would automatically work as he would be the best team worker. Other than that, one has to realize one's limitations. I may not be fully engaged 24 hours a day in devotional service. Someone else may be more engaged. I may not be the most unalloyed devotee without any motivation. Someone else may be more unalloyed. And therefore, I encourage with proper discrimination and knowledge, according to the standard in ISKCON, which is Srila Prabhupada's instructions and books, how to see, perceive. That's what I instruct my followers, how to be able to discriminate properly and therefore serve appropriately every devotee within the society in order to engage in the Sankirtan movement. We're not a devotee, we're not a society simply for, what do they call that? Kirtan Melas. That we have Kirtan Melas and everyone gets together and enjoys their association and goes back to their normal everyday life, which hopefully includes devotional service within it. We're a society to spread the holy name. Yes, Kirtan Melas are very nice, but we're a society to engage 24 hours a day in spreading Krishna consciousness. If not on the streets or door to door or in Harinam or whatever, it's to each other in our family life. Do not forget that my wife, my children, my husband, even my pets, they're all part of Krishna's eternal family. And I must render service to them 24 hours a day if I want to make spiritual advancement in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, devotional service will simply be, interrupted and full of all kinds of material desires. And we won't be able to taste the happiness that comes from Krishna consciousness. We won't be able to take advantage of the incarnation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his representatives such as Srila Prabhupada and the mission and the society that Prabhupada has established to help us come to that platform. Therefore, if I think my spiritual master is the greatest devotee, then the proof will be that he's teaching me perfectly how to make other people into great devotees and how to please the devotees, how to render them, everyone, appropriate service so that I make spiritual advancement and everyone else does too. And if I'm thinking I'm part of a little group or big group and that we have one spiritual master, he's part of this group, we have the best spiritual master, and therefore we know everything and everyone else knows maybe something but not as much as we do, then we've missed the whole point of accepting a spiritual master. We've simply limited ourselves to some material conception of what the spiritual master is. By studying Prabhupada's books and try to understand this philosophy, then we should become a servant, first of all, to Krishna, and then we become a servant of Krishna's representatives appropriately. And then we become servants of others, the innocent people, and we become expert at helping them in cooperation with the devotees to help others become Krishna conscious. Then we'll get the power to avoid the modes of ignorance and passion represented by the non-devotees who have no interest in Krishna or even the mode of goodness, and only that way we'll be able to transcend. Unless we love Krishna, unless we learn appropriately how to associate with all the devotees, unless we actually become interested in helping the innocent become devotees, we won't get this, unless we get the spiritual strength to avoid those who are not interested in going back to the spiritual world. Well, if we get all those things, then we'll go back to the spiritual world. Otherwise, we'll have to come back and practice some more. But now we're in Kali Yuga, and it's not very pleasant practicing devotional service sometimes in Kali Yuga. But that's part of our lesson that we have to learn too. So, of course, it's nice if we actually practice unalloyed devotional service in Kali Yuga. It's blissful, like Lord Nityananda and his associates. But if we're not up to the standard, sometimes it may appear to be not so pleasant. Even if we're aspiring to be devotees, living in Kali Yuga is never going to be pleasant. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for a very interesting analytical class, as usual. So my question is this. When you're a younger devotee, there's a lot of instruction coming your way. You get instructed by your bhakta leader. You have instruction coming from the temple president. You get initiated. You get instruction from your spiritual master. You know, a lot of different. But as you kind of get on in years in Krishna consciousness and you've been around for a while, it seems like less and less instruction is, you know, coming to you from at least personalities. Of course, it's always there in Prabhupada's books and lectures and stuff like that, but not, you know, from a person. So what should senior devotees do? You know, devotees have been around for a while and nobody's instructing them directly, you know, like face to face like you did when you're a younger devotee. Are you supposed to seek out instruction, or are you supposed, you know, what should be the mood of a person who's like been around for a long time and nobody's instructing them?
Well, if we're not hearing the super soul directly in our heart instructing us, we better read Prabhupada's books, come to class, and then, you know, try to see what my obstacles in devotional service are, and either look around and see examples that I could follow to overcome them, or there's no harm in asking someone questions, like you just ask a question. Now, if we feel that no one's really instructing me, then that's not a good sign. If we don't feel that Krishna is directly instructing me, I don't feel that Prabhupada is instructing me from his books, I don't see I'm being instructed by the example of other devotees who are in different ways, then that's not a good sign to feel that we're not being instructed, because that's what we're here for, to get instruction. Even in the spiritual world, everyone's getting instructions. It's not I become a gopi, and then, you know, one of the yutis, the head of the yuti, says, comes up to me and says, you know, can you make this flower garland? And you go, wait a second, I'm a gopi. I'm perfect. What are you instructing me? What's wrong with you? What part of the spiritual world did you come from? No, everyone's there is being instructed. Even Radharani takes instructions from her associates and how to love Krishna. So we should feel like we're being instructed. Otherwise, we can understand that Maya is, well, she may be instructing us a little too much, or else, but we're going to get instruction. Unless we look around and, you know, and we see everyone, I mean, in the perfect Krishna consciousness, we're going to look around and find everyone is my instructor. And if I look around and find no one's instructing me, that's not a good sign. Yes?
Before Srila Prabhupada came, there were already other gurus who were famous in the world, and they make a big following in some ways. Once in a while we meet them, we try to talk to them. And a few times I remember they say, oh, your guru is too heavy. So it means
like
no strict rules and regulations
Probably, yes, that's what guru means, it's heavy. Yeah. So our guru is really heavy.
So that's one of the reasons why they make more followers, and for us...
Great, take them all.
Yeah.
Yeah, Krishna has arranged it. Everyone is actually... It is not only Prabhupada was a guru. Everyone is guru, practically speaking, in one sense. Guru or nasyasya, svajano nasyasya, pita nasyasya. But the real guru is one who delivers one from the repeated birth and death. Someone may be acting as guru, but the actual guru is one who can actually free you from repeated birth and death and bring you to the spiritual world. So you're accepting everyone's accepting so many instructions, but what is the value of the instructions unless it actually brings us to the spiritual world, to the lotus feet of Krishna? So fine, if that's the guru you want, that's what so-called guru you want, that's your own free will. That's why Krishna made the material world for us, so we can be misdirected by so many. And there may be some, you know, amidst the misdirectors, there's the karmis, there's the jnanis, the yogis. So we discriminate. So you're being misdirected by a vikarmi, you're being misdirected by a karmi, which is better than being misdirected by a vikarmi, because the hope is that if you're misdirected or directed, however you want to look at it, by a person who's on a higher level of consciousness, the hope is one day you can accept devotional service to Krishna, unalloyed devotional service, and that way you'll actually begin the real benefit. And without that, sharma evahi kevalam. If you don't do that, you're just wasting your time. But we're not going to tell people that because we're supposed to be expert at trying to encourage them to appreciate what we're doing. And most people will become very angry and insulted because they're doing what they're doing for their false prestige and sense gratification. They'll just become angry at us. We tell them that they're not on the highest platform because they think whatever they do is perfect. So we don't want to do that. But we should know who's perfect and who's not perfect without unnecessarily agitating people's minds. Of course, if we have the power and the potency and a receptive audience, we can tell them the truth. But that's not always so. We can't expect that it's always going to be like that. So therefore, we have to, as Krishna's representative, we have to be cautious how to deal with others who are not really interested in making, who are not consciously interested in becoming devotees of Krishna, or what to speak of if they criticize, then we can tell them the truth, because they're, so they, rather than cut out their tongue, better to explain that, to defeat them with philosophy. And if we can't do that, then better go away.
Maharaj, now, in respect to our youth, our Krishna conscious children, who we've seen
most
that
most of them are in the 40s now.
most of them, we've seen that most of them, the only service they can fit, that they can do, is kirtan.
Great.
And it's very, like a very popular nowadays happening. So how can we encourage them in such a way that they don't feel discouraged, but, oh, well,
you tell them how nicely they're chanting. Let them keep on chanting. That's nice. It depends, you know. We have a relationship with so many different people, so according to how receptive, if they inquire, we can tell them. Otherwise, you know, it depends on a relationship. But to encourage people, if you're there at the kirtan, is encouraging them. If you tell them how nice they're chanting, it encourages them. If you tell them, you know, they're doing very nice service by chanting, that's encouraging them. So if that's what they're willing to do, then we can encourage them in so many different ways. But those who are a little bit more intelligent, we may encourage them in a different way, how to do a little bit more than just come to the kirtans. But that takes some realization on their part. Besides that, they're not youth anymore. They're not 3 years old, 15 years old. A lot of them are in the 40s, I think. 50, maybe some of them in their 50s now, too. Yes, anything else?
Thanks for the wonderful class, Maharaj. Yeah, I just had a question. If you could maybe elaborate a little bit on to what extent guru is a relationship to a person, to an individual person, to what degree a tattva?
Well, a guru has he's an instrument for Krishna. So Krishna has, so guru has two main qualifications to be a guru. Initiating guru, we can say, even a shiksha guru. One is how strictly he's following and how much he's able to inspire others to follow also. So that inspiration to follow means that there must be some kind of relationship. Otherwise, you may follow, as Sanatana Goswami or Haridasa Thakura said, told Sanatana Goswami that, maybe it was the other way around. Sanatana Goswami told Haridasa Thakura, yeah, that you're the most expert devotee. Those are very, some devotees are very expert at preaching. No. Sanatana Goswami. Anyhow, someone told, it's good advice, that some people are very expert at following, but they don't preach very nicely. And some people preach nicely, but they don't follow very strictly. But you're the most expert preacher, and you follow very strictly, therefore you're the best of all the devotees. So both of them have to be there. But if I get someone who's my Diksha Guru, because that's usually what we're talking about in ISKCON, then I may have a very nice relationship with him, but if he doesn't follow himself very strictly, or he doesn't teach me how to follow very strictly, I may have a happy time in devotional service with him, but I'm not going to make very much spiritual advancement. On the other hand, I may have someone who follows very strictly, but as my spiritual guide, but he doesn't really have I don't have a very good relationship with him. And therefore, I may be not so inspired to follow as strictly as he is, or to follow his instructions so strictly. So it's a combination of both have to be there. Yes.
I'll go with Advaitacharya. That's my lesson as far as that, who's talking that. But aside from that, Maharaj, it says in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, in that pastime with Narada Muni, Dhruva Maharaj, after Dhruva Maharaj performed those austerities, and one purport Prabhupada says that the spiritual master, he could have, Narada Muni, he was very powerful, Bhagavan Sri Narada, he could have awarded Dhruva Maharaj the benediction he desired immediately without him doing anything, but Prabhupada says that's not the duty of the spiritual master. The duty of the spiritual master is to engage the disciple in devotional service. So my question is this, does the spiritual master have that power? I mean, I know it's not our culture, it's not, you know, what, but no, Prabhupada seemed to indicate there that he could have. And what is, and if, well, what if he doesn't, what's Kripa City all about? Like, isn't Kripa City that the spiritual master can, without the person really having the necessary qualifications, just do that if he wants to, just by unidari?
So why doesn't he do it? Prabhupada wasn't compassionate, he saw all these suffering souls, and he was looking around to someone who liked. He liked to give his mercy to?
No, I'm just saying, I mean...
Could he do it? Then why, if he could do it, why didn't he do it? Why didn't Vasudev Dat, he went and told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I want to accept all the sins of everyone in the universe on my head, they all can go back to Godhead and let me suffer here. So Prabhupada wasn't on that same level. But he does it, because if we went back to the spiritual world, say, someone got the mercy, they didn't do anything. Spiritual master waved his hand, gave some blessing, went back to the spiritual world. He's sitting there. Everyone's coming around and say, can you do some service? And he goes, well, no, I'm a mercy case. I'm here by my spiritual master. You know, I'm just, as long as he keeps on blessing me, I'm here. And if he doesn't, then I'm gone. No, I have to practice devotional service, or else that's what his mercy is. He's expecting us to do something for Krishna that's voluntary. So that's what he's trying to wake up within our heart. Atachi tam samadhatum nasakshno sima istiram abhyasena yogena tatamami chantum dananjaya. If you cannot fix your mind upon me, then follow the regular principles of devotional service, and this way develop a desire to obtain me. So that's, he's trying to develop the desire to obtain Krishna. Whether Kripa Siddha is there, that's very rare. But then we can see the examples of Kripa Siddha. Generally, they deserve it. It's just that they're being given some special Kripa in this lifetime because they deserved it from previous lifetimes. It's not just by accident.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Thank you for a wonderful class, Maharaj. After hearing all this morning, I was just thinking that you know, there's so many examples, even to the BBT, so many people have written to the BBT saying they received a book from a devotee. And from receiving that book, they're at home, and, you know, they're reading, and they begin chanting japa. They've never met a devotee. They don't even know what a devotee looks like. Not in all cases, but there are several cases. They never even seen a devotee in their life. But by getting a book, they were able to establish Krishna consciousness in their own, you know, in their own way,
yeah,
of what they thought. And sometimes they would write to the BBT saying they didn't know how to pronounce Bhaktivedanta Swami. You know, there's a lot of mispronunciation. My point being is that these individuals, just by reading Prabhupada's books, were able to develop a certain level of Krishna consciousness. And what to speak of as devotees if we don't read those or continue reading Srila Prabhupada's books? It appears to me that we will lose if we don't constantly read. Like Prabhupada said, we should read 1 hour a day. Every one of us should read 1 hour a day Srila Prabhupada's books. And in that way, we're getting constant siksha from Srila Prabhupada, and we get constant realization from that reading to the point where our Krishna consciousness is strengthened. So it's almost imperative as devotees, if we really want to understand all these things that we're talking about, the position of a guru, like you mentioned this, you know, you can hear it, but you'll forget about it the minute you walk out the door. Literally, we'll forget about it as soon as they see Rabindranath Prabhu. Everybody's thinking about, well, I want this, and that class. But if we constantly read every day, it'll be reminding us constantly about the position of the guru, the acharya, devotees, the importance of chanting, hearing. So to me, it's almost kind of like imperative that we really press this issue of reading Prabhupada's books and getting a clarity of what it means to be in Krishna consciousness. And then we can, this discrimination you were talking about. There's a lot of us, we discuss discrimination. A lot of devotees have questions about how to discriminate who's who and what's what. You know, how to discriminate with the yogis and the meditators. But if we read Prabhupada's books and study them, that answer will be there. Like, it'll be vivid. It'll be so plain as to what Krishna consciousness is about. So I just thought I'd throw in about the importance of reading every single day. That is tapasya. Prabhupada said that is part of our tapasya, to read his books 1 hour. He actually said 2 hours, but he also said 1 hour. So at least 1 hour we should read, and we'll get this intelligence.
Hi, Mara. Sorry for interrupting you, but actually it was Lord Chaitanya. And it's important because the point he was making to Haridas Thakur was this. Some devotees like to preach, but they don't act very nicely. Some devotees act very nicely, but they don't like to preach. He said, you're perfect because you do both. You preach and you act very nicely. And based on where we are, a lot of us, we have to admit, we like to hang out with those who act nicely. They're sweet, whether they preach or not. So we need to push ourselves to do both. And the examples are there. We have examples in our society of devotees who act very nicely with everyone, and we also have examples of devotees who go out every day and preach. So those who are, you know, not strong in either can learn from both.
Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.